Good morning, and welcome to the May 13th meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Commissioners, will you unmute, and will the clerk please call the roll?
Commissioner Villacana?
Here.
Commissioner Moultrie?
Here.
Commissioner Simpson-Spearman?
Here.
Commissioner Henry? Commissioner Henry, you're... Mic is muted. Okay.
Here.
Thank you. And Chairman Campbell.
Present.
We have a quorum.
We have a quorum. Thank you. Will you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. At this time, we are open for public comments for those items not on today's agenda. Staff, do we have anybody on deck?
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Campbell. No pre-recorded messages were received. However, members of the public that wish to speak during general public comment can use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing star 9. We do have a request to speak from Gianni Minucci, and I will request to unmute your connection, Mr. Minucci, and you should receive a notification from Zoom, and your line has been unmuted.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Mm-hmm. Is this the correct time to have public comments on the parish project?
No, it is not, sir.
Okay.
That will be announced later on in the agenda.
All right. Sorry about that.
No problem. Okay. Good morning, everybody. The County Planning Commissioners, planning staff, and members of the public wishing to provide live public comment are participating in this meeting using Zoom. Alternate methods for public participation can be found attached to the agenda, as well as a link to the Zoom user guide for public participation. The public may watch or listen to the meeting live online at www.slocounty.ca.gov. If you are a member of the public wishing to provide live public comment and have joined us by website or smartphone application, when I call for public comment on a specific item, please do so by using the raised hand feature at the bottom of your screen. If you are joining us by phone, please press star 9 to raise your hand. Announce your name or last three digits of your phone number if you are calling in, and let you know that you are live on time online to make your comments. You will be timed, you will be timed for 3 minutes as usual. If you are streaming the meeting through Channel 21 or the county website and wish to provide live public comment through Zoom, please log in or call in early, as there is an approximate 60-second delay between meeting and live stream. Please remember to turn down your broadcast volume when speaking during public comment to reduce interference feedback noise. Seeing we have no open public comment, then I'll close public comment and ask for planning staff updates. Ms. Fowler?
Good morning, Chair Campbell and Commissioners. Alexandra Fowler, representing the Planning and Building Department. There are currently no reportable recent actions by the Board of Supervisors that pertain to your commission. However, regarding appeals, staff did receive an appeal of your April 22nd approval of conditional use permit DRC 2018-00110, which was a request to establish cannabis operations consisting of outdoor and indoor cultivation and a nursery for a project site located at 1255 Tierra Redonda Road, north of the village of Oak Shores. Regarding upcoming hearing items for your commission's consideration, you have the following items tentatively scheduled on your May 27th meeting. The first is a request for an amendment to the conditions for a residential tract number 2388 to modify building setbacks for three of the residential lots and to clarify the agricultural vineyard setback for all of the 16 residential lots. This subdivision is located on the west side of Price Canyon Road, just north of the city of Pismo Beach. The second item that is scheduled for that date is a development plan coastal development permit, which is a request for cannabis non-storefront delivery, distribution, and manufacturing within an existing building. The permit request also includes concurrent processing of a building permit to establish an additional unit within the existing structure, as well as associated tenant improvements. The project site is located at 2115 Willow Road, west of the community of Napomo. For your June 10th meeting, the following three items have been tentatively scheduled. The first is a tract map with a conditional use permit, and it is a request to subdivide one existing parcel of approximately 1 acre into 12 parcels, ranging in size from 2,500 square feet to 2,800 square feet, for the purpose of sale and development, and to authorize smaller lot use sizes as a planned development. And this is for the purpose of construction of 12 detached single-family units and 24 one-bedroom apartment units. This project site is located at 651 West Tuff Street in the community of Napomo. The second item is an amendment, which is a request to amend the previously approved campus master plan design for an existing private school facility that was approved via conditional use permit DRC 2008-00021, and that project site is located at 705 North Oak Park Boulevard, immediately adjacent to the city limits of Pismo Beach and Arroyo Grande. And the last item that is scheduled is a development plan and coastal development permit, which is a request to allow 10 additional new mobile homes to an existing mobile home park known as Morro Shores in the community of Los Osos, and other on-site amenities for the residents. That project site location is 633 Ramona Avenue in the community of Los Osos. This concludes staff's update.
Thank you, Alexandria. Does anyone have any questions of staff?
No, sir.
Somebody have a comment? No, okay. Then we'll move on with our agenda. Ramona, would you please introduce the first hearing item?
Well, first we should do the consent calendar.
Thank you.
Not a problem.
My papers here. Consent agenda, the April 8th and April 3rd, 22nd Planning Commission minutes. Are there any withdrawals for discussion of those?
Mr. Chair, I just have one question. On page one of the consent agenda under item three, the paragraph talks about Commissioner Vilcana abstaining as a result of technical difficulties, but that seems to be inconsistent with the voting tables, and I just wonder which is correct on that notation.
Commissioner Vilcana did abstain because he was it unable to connect online during that particular time. So the voting table does not indicate he abstained?
That's what I'm seeing, Ramona, but I'm not sure I'm looking at exactly the right tables, but there's nothing there that has an abstention for Commissioner Vilcana.
I will then note that correction here for the record and correct that when we get back to the office.
There's another inconsistency as it says that Alex made the motion to approve. So,
I think this abstention is actually in the wrong spot. This was for the Chevron Environmental from the previous week. So, I think that abstention is incorrect.
It's not, right.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line for it, I think.
For the previous week. Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Any further corrections or additions? I'll entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
It moved and second to approve the consent agenda. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion is carried. Next item is into our agenda, and I'll ask the staff to please introduce the first hearing item.
Hearing item number 5 is a hearing to consider a request by DLP Ag Partnership LP for a conditional use permit to amend the existing conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2020-00003, Supervisorial District 1, Project Manager Holly Phipps. And if there are any members of the public wishing to comment on this item, please use the raised hand feature at the bottom of your screen or press star 9 if you are joining us by phone. Please do this at this time so that you can be ready for the public comment portion of the meeting. Please continue with your presentation, Ms. Phipps. Thank you.
Is there any ex parte on this issue?
Yeah, I do have a couple things. I did speak to the neighbor, Gianni Minucci, regarding his concerns on the project. And he was just clarifying that he's not opposed to the restaurant part of it, but to the amplified music past 5 o'clock. Additionally, I don't know if this is the proper time, but my concern was I'm just down the street. So I was concerned about basically issues that might affect my ability to vote on it. So I reached out to county council. We reviewed the FPPC conflict of interest, and anything outside of 1,000 feet is considered not to be a substantial effect on my property. And since I'm 5,000 feet away, we decided it wouldn't be a conflict for me to weigh in on this issue.
Yeah. And on that standpoint, I have a professional relationship with this gentleman, but it's been 20 years or more past on a different parcel in Creston than what he's talking about now. So I, too, discussed with someone, and it was clear to go to. Any further ideas there?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I did visit the site. I did not speak to anybody, though.
Likewise, Mr. Chair, I visited the site and didn't speak with anyone.
And I'm the third person that visited the site and didn't speak to anybody. So.
Right, you all get your little merit badges this week. All right, where are we? Continuing on with the presentation.
Thank you, Chairman Campbell, and good morning, members of the Commission. Holly Phipps, Project Manager. I would just like to add that a 10-day notice for this conditional use permit, DRC 2020-0003, was published on April 29th in the New Times, and neighboring properties were noticed on April 28th. So before you today is a request by DLP Ag Partnership, LP, Parish Winery, for a conditional use permit to amend the existing conditional use permit, DRC 2013-00113, to allow an approximate 1,900 square foot limited food serving facility and to revise a special event program to extend the end time for outdoor amplified music from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. I would like to also note that the project request that you've probably heard throughout the briefings of upcoming hearings originally stated that the applicant was requesting 10 p.m., but the applicant revised his project description to 9 p.m. The proposed limited food serving facility would be located in the same structure as the existing hospitality and administration building, and will be incidental to the primary use on site, which is the wine production facility. The applicant has requested a modification of ordinance standards that limits a limited food serving facility to 800 square feet to allow a 1,935 square foot of existing use areas. The standard may be waived if it can be proven to be unnecessary and the project meets all other development standards. The applicant is requesting a modification of ordinance standards to allow amplified music beyond 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. for their existing special event program. The standard may be waived by the review authority if findings can be made that the noise at the property line will not exceed 65 dB. The winery is located on the north side of Adelaida Road, approximately 3 miles west of city of Paso Robles. The project is located in the agricultural land use category. Here we see the parcel outlined in yellow. The nearest neighbor is 970 feet from the area where the amplified music would be played. Shown in purple at the bottom of your screen is the kitchen and pantry. And shown in light blue is the indoor seating and that will take over the, will be within the tasting room, members only lounge, and the covered porch. So here we see a chart of the existing uses and proposed new use areas. The kitchen and pantry area remains the same. The restaurant seating area includes the 454-square-foot indoor tasting room with the outdoor covered porch area, which then totals 1,414 square feet. Just a little history here. Food pairing versus restaurants in the ag land use category. The county made an ordinance interpretation in 2010 after a winery was operating a restaurant without an approval. It was determined that the winery could maintain its kitchen for allowed activities such as food preparation, winemaker dinners, and other permitted activities. The kitchen could also be used to prepare finger foods, prepared tastings with selected wines for consumption in the tasting room. The idea is that someone could look at a list and choose a pairing of pre-selected food items matched with a specific wine at a set price. That would be considered incidental to and associated with a tasting room use rather than a restaurant operating as a limited food facility, a made-to-order menu. Food pairing, the commercial kitchen was established as a secondary use to support a winery and other permitted events and not to function as a standalone restaurant where meals where they were made to order meals were served. So then, as we have proposed today, we have a restaurant, which is also a limited food facility, and it's in the ag land use category. And as a restaurant defined by our ordinance, includes selling prepared foods, drinks for on-premise consumption, includes drive-in restaurants, lunch counters, refreshment stands. Restaurants and delis and counters operated as subordinate to service facilities with other establishments are not included here unless they're operated or leased by outside operators. Here we have a chart, and looking at the proposed project, the ordinance meets all but one of the standards, and that's why the modification of 800 square feet has been requested. Here we're looking at the outdoor areas for amplified music. The northwest location is here, if you can see my arrow, and the southwest location would be here. The noise analysis determined that the noise of the property line will not exceed 65 decibels as required by ordinance. County did receive comments from neighbors expressing concerns about amplified noise. The acoustical analysis completed for the current project was modeled around this winery, the built environment, where a previous acoustical analysis was modeled with simulations that had shown at property lines the decibels at 65 without mitigation. And that was for the previous project. And what we have here today is acoustical analysis that shows the decibel levels that are well below 65 decibels at the property line. I would also like to note, as I previously stated, in 2015, outdoor amplified music at the commission was proposed to 10 p.m. and it was then modified to 5 p.m. With that, staff is recommending approval of the conditional use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions listed in Exhibit B. Here with us today is the agents, Lacey Zubik and Jamie Jones, the owner, David Parrish, and our acoustical analysis, Sarah Tabal. Staff is available for questions, and that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Any questions of the staff report?
I have a couple, Mr. Chairman.
Please go ahead.
Hi, Holly. Thanks for the report.
Would you like me to stop my PowerPoint presentation?
I'm sorry?
Would you like me to stop my PowerPoint presentation?
On my screen, it is stopped, but I don't know.
We have some confusion here. Are you through with the staff report?
Yes.
Okay. So now we're going to discuss anything we may of your report. Then we will go to applicant presentation.
Okay. But before we get to the applicant, just a couple of questions. Or maybe they could wait. I don't know. But Holly, the proposal is effectively increasing the seating area from about 450 square feet to about 1,400 square feet. So it's like tripling the seating area. And that might be okay, it might not, but the staff report doesn't speak at all to questions of traffic or parking or water use. And shouldn't those have been part of the staff report? And furthermore, the discussion that you just had with food pairing and the history and so on wasn't included in the written staff report. So it's kind of seems like there's kind of an inadequacy in some of this, but maybe you can at least address the concern, or not the concern, but the question I have about the increase. There's obviously going to be an increase in parking demand, traffic, and water.
Thank you, Commissioner Matari. Public Works was referred, and they had no concerns with this project. A lot of times when we have restaurants that are within a tasting room, they capture existing traffic that's in the area because the people are there tasting, and then they decide to go ahead and eat. So I will defer to Public Works for any comments they may would like to add.
How about parking and water? Well, I mean, so that would be a rationale for saying the traffic impacts are not significant. But there was nothing in the staff report about that. I guess I'm just disappointed that planning issues that should have been part of this analysis were lacking. There was no analysis of how much parking is. What is the standard for restaurant parking in a winery? Is it relevant? How many more spaces would be needed? Are they there? None of that was in the report, and we're kind of. I'll just stop. That's not a question anymore.
I might add a little bit to that. I think if this has come up in the past, and the word restaurant is used, which perhaps it certainly should be called a restaurant, but we've always kind of passed on it in the past because of the amount of crush pad room and other than during the actual winemaking process, the off time for the rest of the year, there's usually quite a bit of room around there because the trucks aren't coming on in and out, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, Don, that's right. And that would be an explanation of why additional parking is not required. But what I'm saying is there wasn't even an analysis that said additional, you know, a restaurant that increases by tripling the size of the seating area would require X number of parking spaces. And by the way, it's a winery, and there's this crush area, and there's plenty of space. That would be fine, but there wasn't even a discussion about that. So, again, that's not a – I apologize. That's not a question. That's a critique. So I will stop.
You know, just to follow a little bit, Holly, when – because we're also looking at the sound and the concert or whatever may be happening out there to increase the number of people, increase the time. To Mike's point, what was the analysis that was done for the increased traffic on the road to support those events? Where's the infrastructure analysis?
So is your question, you're talking about what was previously approved, the events, or you're talking about the new use, the restaurant?
Well, I'm talking about, since you're looking at an increase in time, and therefore I would think an increase in number, how did that impact the infrastructure to get out there?
For the restaurant and ag land use category, when you have a primary use as a winery facility, the hours of operation of a restaurant is limited to the hours of operation of a tasting room. So the hours will not change for this project. And as far as the parking, we've had Robert Hall, we've had Niner, we've had previous other wineries that came in for restaurant uses, and through review and public works review and stuff, it was always determined that the parking didn't need to be increased because it was capturing, internally capturing people there that was tasting. And history has shown that there was never a need for increased parking, especially on this property here. There's ample parking.
Holly, I really appreciate the parking conversation. I'm talking more about the road getting in and out. And when you're taking a look, you're increasing the hours of the event from 5 to 10. So you're increasing the size of the event in a way. So talk to me a little bit about what review was done in terms of putting more people on the road later at night. Talk to me a little bit about that, please.
So the events that they have proposed is not changing. The hours of operation of events have not changed. The only thing has changed is the hours that the amplified music would be allowed. So there's no changes to the past entitlement. So the events and the people coming and going has already been analyzed by the previous project. So again, it would just be extending the noise.
Thank you so much. And I understand that. But when you increase the length of an event, you do can increase the size of the event. Would you not agree?
If we were increasing the events, yes.
You're increasing how long that event is going. Are you not?
Yeah. No, the event may still go till 10 p.m. Per the conditions of approval. I have to bring up the conditions. That has not changed from the previous entitlement. The same timelines for the events are still occurring. That has not changed. It's the when the amplified music will be allowed to commence and then be turned off. Before, the amplified music had to stop at 5 p.m.
Okay, thank you, Holly. I guess I'm looking at the event when the music turns off. You have a different type of event than when the music is on. Do you understand what I'm saying, Holly?
Well, the applicant can help explain that, but Mr. Parrish, he has music there on site. Already, he has like jazz bands and stuff without amplified music. And during his dinners where they're having the event, they go up to the time that they're allowed per the previous entitlement. But this time, if they're out there, he can then turn on amplified music.
I'm going to suggest that we move on to the applicant or representative presentation, which may help us to clarify some of these thoughts.
And Chair Campbell, before we move on to the agent, I would just like to point out that J.R. Beard with Public Works is requesting to speak. Okay. I don't know if you want to take his comments now.
It might be relative to Commissioner Simpson, so let's go ahead.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is J.R. Beard, Public Works. So to add to Holly's comments, when we do evaluation of these things, first and foremost, this was, in our opinion, you know, capturing what was already there as far as traffic with regards to the extended hours and the impacts to the roadway system. We do look at that as well. You know, key for us is looking at peak hour trips, which occur from 4 to 6 p.m. So the extension of the time actually would better the situation, if you will, for the peak hour trips that are generated and the impact to the roadway system. So that's just our evaluation of when we look at these things. So from Public Works standpoint, we didn't see that this was going to be causing any additional issues for the roadway system with regards to the expansion of the use of and I don't want to call it a restaurant use. This was like a reconfiguration of your interior space. It was just capturing what they had already there, in our opinion. Thank you.
Any more specific questions? If not, let's move into the applicant's presentation.
Thank you, Chair Campbell. We do have Ms. Jamie Jones and Lazy Zubak that have joined the meeting.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Campbell, members of the Commission. I am Jamie Jones with Kirk Consulting, and I am going to hand off the presentation to Lacey Zubak, a supervising planner with Kirk Consulting and project manager. She will provide the applicant's presentation, and then Lacey and myself and Sarah and Mr. Parrish will be available for questions at the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Lacey, unmuted?
Yes, I am. Sorry, I'm sharing my screen right now, so you should be seeing it shortly. Can you guys all see my screen?
Ms. Zubak, we are seeing your screen. However, we are viewing your notes on the side, so perhaps you need to change your display settings.
All right. How about there? There.
Perfect. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, as Jamie mentioned, good morning, Planning Commissioners. My name is Lacey Zubak. I'm with Kirk Consulting, and I'm here today representing the Parrish family to amend their previously approved conditional use permit. Holly talked a little bit about the project site located west on Highway 101, west of Highway 101, located on the north side of Adelaida Road, just over 3 miles from the city of Paso Robles. The property has historically been used for agriculture, which continues to be the primary focus. The Parrish Family Winery, as we know it today, and I noticed you guys all visited, so you see it for what it is, was approved in Planning Commission in 2015, which included the winery and hospitality buildings, as well as the special events program that allowed outdoor amplified music from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The winery and hospitality buildings were both constructed operations since 2018. The 42-acre property with a 30-acre vineyard, an ag barn, in addition to the winery and hospitality buildings. There are two existing access points from Adelaida Road, the primary access located on the east side of the parcel and the secondary access located at the west end of the parcel. And before you hear today, with the request to amend the previously approved conditional use permit to extend the outdoor amplified music to 9 p.m. and to incorporate the use of a limited food serving facility. The purpose of the project before you is partially driven by the target market of wine-related activities under the existing event program, and in part by the guidelines imposed by the pandemic. Extending the outdoor amplified music to after 5 p.m. is not intended to transform the property into a concert hall and continues to steer away from hosting weddings. It is to allow for an enhanced visitor experience, including group dinners with music, enjoying summer evenings when the weather is nice, and provides for more space and existing guest and table spacing. We have worked with the acoustical engineer to identify appropriate areas for the activities to minimize impacts. Based on COVID stage 2 restrictions for wineries to remain operable, they required food service. And this was well received by our customer. So the application was modified in August 2020 to include the use of a limited food serving facility. Our request is to extend the hours of outdoor amplified music specific to the special event program after 5 p.m. until 9 p.m. The outdoor amplified music is allowed after 5 p.m. if the Planning Commission can find that the noise levels at the property lines will not exceed 65 decibels. An acoustical analysis was conducted on-site by 45 dB Acoustics in October 2019. The analysis specifically evaluated two stage locations which are currently used for the approved special events today. The analysis concluded that the noise levels will not exceed 65 decibels at all property lines. In fact, the noise levels are well below that threshold. when looking at the parish's property, which is surrounded by large ag properties with various ag uses, it is no surprise the event area far exceeds the required 400-foot setback. The nearest off-site residence is located right here, more than 900 feet away to the east. The acoustical analysis notes a max level of 55 dB at all property lines, well below the required standard of 65. The location of the event area between buildings, which you can see here in this enlargement, and topographical separation from the nearest neighbors to the east provides a natural buffer. Furthermore, the speaker orientation is directed towards the building and away from property lines. Again, this is the pink and purple orientation right here of the speakers. A request for a 1,935 square foot limited food serving facility will utilize the existing kitchen and pantry. The kitchen becomes dual purpose, serving the expanded menu of the limited food serving facility, the food and wine pairing program, as well as other winery events, including special events. Seating areas will include the members' room, shown right here, the covered porch adjacent to the members' room, a small portion of the tasting room, as well as the kitchen and storage pantry shown. Modification request to allow the limited food serving facility to be larger than 800 square feet. The square foot increase is based on utilizing existing visitor serving areas, but spreading out the seating to create distance between tables. Here are the four permitted existing areas proposed to serve a limited food serving facility. Up here we have the members' lounge, commercial kitchen and pantry, a covered porch, and a portion of the tasting room looking into the members' lounge. As you can see, these require no improvements today. To conclude, outdoor amplified music is well below the 65 dB at the property line in compliance with the finding required to allow outdoor amplified music beyond 5 p.m. As I just noted, the limited food service facility will utilize all existing use areas, and there are no other proposed changes to the winery project or special events program as outlined in the previous entitlement, including the special events program limitation to 2 weekends per month. I would like to request Planning Commission to approve the project as proposed. As Jamie mentioned, my counterpart, Jamie, is here. Owner-operator David Parrish is also here. And our acoustic consultant, Sarah Tabitz, is here today, and we welcome questions, any questions you may have. That concludes my presentation.
Well, we'll move on to commissioner questions for applicant, and if the commissioners would choose one or all of them or whatever, let them know who's answering your question.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question for Lacey. Lacey, would you be able to put your slide deck back up, please? It's the page that's just prior to the acoustic map that talks about numbers in the events or special events, and it is...
What you were referring to?
It's the page that has the events and the event numbers. It's the page just before the acoustic map. I there weren't any page numbers, so I can't point you to the exact pages. Keep going. In one place, it talks about there. Right back one page. One more. Okay, this is one more page back, please. Okay, there's two different numbers there. There's a 40-day. All right. You need to go forward one page, please.
It's delayed.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so there's one place it says 40 days a year, and then further on down, there's a 20-day. I saw two different numbers on one of these pages. And I can't. Oh, there it is. 20 special events annually, 5 to 9, and then further on down, limitation, 40 days a year. Could you please just explain for me the difference there, what that actually means? Are we expanding from 20 to 40?
No, the special events program approved today is for 20 events a year. This below is the standard from Title 22, what you're seeing that as special events. If we were to modify the special events today, this is the standard that we would be allowed to meet. What I highlighted as important to this section is the standard relating to amplified music.
Okay, so I understand. If I understand you, then the request is only to amplified music. There's no request to expand the number of events.
Correct. Yeah, we are still at 20 events annually, and there is no change proposed to that, only specific to the outdoor amplified music.
Perfect. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Question to the acoustical analysis. I live in the canyon, and that's kind of part of the reason why I reached out to council was, I know that sound travels in these canyons. I can hear the music from the fair. Mount Olive does worship services, and you can hear the music, which is right there next to Parrish. And I just wanted to find out on the acoustical analysis, was it done at ground level or was it done up higher? Because I know at ground level there would be a lot of shielding from the existing vineyards, but as soon as you get up higher, which most of the houses are up off of the canyon floor, was the noise monitor at higher levels as well? Because I would assume that it wouldn't be shielded as much by vines or structures or anything like that.
Alex, I would like to defer to our sound acoustical analysis, Sarah Tabbitts. I know it was modeled in the real environment at these two stage locations. However, I'm not sure the height of those modeling. If we can defer to her.
Ms. Tabbitts has connection has been muted, so she is available for questions.
Great. Hi, this is Sarah Tabbitts. Can everybody hear me?
Yep.
Great. So it's an excellent question, the one regarding, terrain and how that affects noise propagation outdoors. We do use a modeling software that takes into account terrain and the attenuation by ground cover, buildings, etc. And there is a phenomenon that occurs, you can call it the canyon effect, perhaps, where terrain, lower than at the source and lower in elevation at the receiver, can increase somewhat the noise levels that would otherwise occur if the terrain were flat. I think that's how I'm interpreting the question.
That's correct.
So, although our report showed propagation of noise out to the property lines, in general, I can say that when the canyon effect occurs, you can see some increase in levels beyond the property line. That can absolutely be the case. However, I went back and looked at the calculation just to make sure that we didn't limit our calculation area in too closely, because it's an excellent question. And what I did with the, I further calculated out to a distance of 1,000 feet, and the amount of increase is less than 5 decibels. We built in some inherent conservatism in our model that is approximately equal to 5 decibels, meaning that we use a sound source level for the speaker locations of 95 decibels at a 10 feet distance. And that is consistent with quite a lively event. We err on the side of conservatism or caution in this way. We could have easily, with the events as described, jazz bands, not some sort of wedding party atmosphere, those noise levels tend to be lower than even what we've assumed here. So given those, different competing factors, there is no no risk with these noise sources or sound sources as they've been defined to approach the limit of 65 dB at, well, certainly not at the property line and even beyond that.
So to kind of clarify, so you said modeling. So were there actually readings taken at the site while music was playing? And I guess my question is, was it just taken simply at ground level or was it taken up at a higher level as well? I mean, that I think that's kind of where I'm giving clarity.
Well, this is we can get into some complexity here, but yes, we did take the extra step of going to the site and setting up speakers and on tripods at I believe it was a 2 meter height, approximately 6 feet, and we did take some measurements at distance to verify and sort of calibrate our model for the ground attenuation that is occurring. We took measurements right next to the road to the southwest and some other locations. So taking measurements really has limited value. I will say that it's more important to define the sound source level appropriately. And the software is extremely accurate in doing so. It calculates out with an international standard that's used throughout the industry, takes into account temperature, humidity, and assumes downwind in all locations. I do want to point out that compliance and audibility are two very separate things. So the standard of 65 decibels for any instantaneous maximum is, 65 decibels. You can maybe do some research online as to what kind of noise sources or levels that sort of, can equate to. But for a quiet night, quiet environment, low winds, no vegetation noise to mask the sound, etc., homes can definitely experience background noise levels of, 30 decibels approximately, which is quite a quiet environment. So when you have a noise source that's 10 or 20 decibels higher, it can certainly be audible. However, we do not evaluate audibility. That's nowhere in the code. And the standard for 65 decibels maximum and the accompanying 50 decibels hourly LAEQ are the quantifiers that we evaluate against this particular county code.
All right, thank you.
Any further questions of staff or the applicant's representatives?
I guess one extra question from staff as well, and maybe applicant. So was I led to understand? So I understand that the events can go at this point from up until 10 o'clock. Amplified music at this point has to stop at 5, but unamplified music can go basically the whole period of the event, the 20 events up until 10 o'clock, but that's unamplified music.
Right. And if I can clarify, Alex, it's the outdoor amplified music versus indoor amplified music. So under the current approved event program, they can have the amplified music indoors for dinner until 10 p.m. And so the purpose with the request of requesting until 9 for outdoor amplified music is to allow, more flexibility with the existing event program. And frankly, to the site's lovely, you've all been there, and to enjoy some of the evening times in the summer when the weather allows it. And the other important point on this event permit that's different than other permits is that our existing approval limits to two weekends a month. So this isn't an activity that goes every weekend, every month in the summertime. It's already been limited to the two weekends a month in the current land use permit. So it's the same customers. It's just allowing that amplified music that's allowed inside to go outdoors.
Okay. Thank you.
If I could, I ask a question of Sarah, please. Sarah, when I look at sound, and when regulators look at sound, they're looking at what, how loud it is, how long it's playing, and how often. Is the how long it's playing factored into your analysis?
Well, that's a great question. With a sound source like music, particularly amplified music, the hourly LAEQ that is within the code as well, is less relevant than the 65 decibel instantaneous maximum, which is, as you see here, you know, the Title 22, limit. They have, justifiably sort of, focused in the code on the 65 dB instantaneous maximum rather than looking at the hourly, because with music, there's a 15 to 20, you know, decibel difference between that hourly, think of it as an average or an equivalent decibel level, and the instantaneous maximum of 70, which gets adjusted to 65 when it's music. So for this code, verification or analysis, we look at the maximum. So these can be considered a short duration or, you know, an instantaneous maximum associated with a crescendo in music, you know, when it's louder. It's a safe assumption to assume that if the maximum instantaneous level does not exceed 65, then the hourly will also be satisfied for music. That may not be the case with different other, you know, noise sources. Does that answer your question?
You're muted, Christina.
Thank you, Sarah. It does.
Right. Are there any further questions of the applicant by the commission or staff? We will then open public comment. Staff, what do we have on deck there?
Thank you, Chair Campbell. No pre-recorded messages were received for this item. However, members of the public that we wish to speak on this hearing item can use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing star 9. And we do have requests to speak from Gianni Minucci. Mr. Minucci, we will now unmute your connection and you will receive a notification from Zoom. Your line has been unmuted and your comments are limited to 3 minutes. Thank you.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, we can hear you, Mr. Minucci.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Gianni Minucci. I'm the owner of Minucci Winery, also known as Wild Coyote. My property is directly across the applicant on the south side of Adelaide Road. We're a working family, owned business since 1996, developed and still operating our vineyard, winery, and a licensed bed and breakfast facility. Our family resident is on site, and we're raising our three teenage children, which are the main reason for selecting this quiet neighborhood. We also have a respectful reputation for lodging with guests all over the country, choosing our location for serenity and peacefulness. The proposed project especially regarding the amplified outdoor music with extended hours, will be very damaging to my family resident and lodging guests. On a normal day, we can hear people's voices across the street. You can imagine the impact amplified music will have in a canyon-like setting and the disturbance it will cause. Myself and a few neighbors originally objected to this exact request a few years ago during the initial use permit, and at that time, the board member's decision supported us. Not sure why this is coming back up again. My objections to the project are exactly the same as before, and I will continue to object. This will harm my family, quality of life, and my business. Also, there were concerns from the fire and police department regarding the public road improvements and resources, and to my knowledge, nothing has changed, even worse now. We need to keep Adelaide safe and respect the neighbors. This project will only benefit the applicants financially, which does not even have an on-site resident to understand the pain it will cause to others. The county's enforcement resources cannot control or gauge amplified music nuisance, especially in the middle of the night, and the police department doesn't want to bother with it. By approving this permit, you'll be giving license to other wineries with special event permits to turn the neighborhood into a concert hall party, which will spiral out of control. Thank you for your consideration. I hope you take this objective seriously and vote accordingly. This is Adelaide, not Vina Robles Concert Hall. Thank you. Peace out.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Mannucci. The next request to speak
go to the next person, Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question of Mr. Mannucci?
I think it'll help our deliberation. Yes.
It's just a quick question. Mr. Mannucci, I'm going out there. I noticed that your property also has food service on it. I was just wondering, what are the hours that people can come to your restaurant or your food service?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Yep. No, we just stay pretty standard, normal 5 o'clock. We shut down and call it good.
Okay, thanks.
And we don't need...
Next person up.
Great. Thank you, Chair Campbell. The next request to speak is from Jack Perry. Mr. Perry, you will receive a notification from Zoom that we are attempting to unmute your connection. And you will... Okay. Your line has been unmuted, and your comments are limited to 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. In regards to the Parrish Winery proposal to extend the end time of their current amplified music permit to 9 p.m., my family and I are very much against it. We live at 3945 Adelaide, which is just across the street from the southwest end of Mr. Parrish. The Parrish Winery backs into a hill, and it creates a natural amphitheater with our house directly in front of it. With no man-made or natural breaks to dampen the sound, we will get the full brunt of it. Mr. Parrish wants to develop a facility like he's planning. Why move to a quiet area and change it into something different just to make financial gain? He doesn't live on site, and he doesn't hear any noise. There's plenty of areas in the county that allow these functions. Why not go there? My family and I have lived at our home in Adelaide for 34 years and resent someone coming in and trespassing our quiet, rural way of life. We're not opposed to wineries. We just don't want to be forced to listen to their extra activities. We ask you to please abide by the original use permit to deny the 9 p.m. music. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Chair Campbell, that concludes the request to speak for this item.
Okay.
Chair, can I ask a quick question? So the original use permit, there was a request for amplified music to 9 p.m., and it was denied, it sounds like. Can you give me a little history on that, if possible?
Holly, could you?
Okay, go ahead.
Originally the project was, when it came in 2015, the request was for outdoor amplified music to 10 p.m. that was changed to 5 p.m., and now the applicant is wishing to bump it up to 9 p.m.
Was that change appealed at all, or did that just hit the Planning Commission and not go any further?
Planning Commission, no further than that.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll make one comment, having been through probably 10 or 12 hearings exactly like this one when it comes to music or the expansion of an existing winery into a larger music area or whatever, but the same kind of thing. And staff can correct me if I'm wrong, but I have not had any fee. We had the same kind of back and forth as we're having now, including the public's comments, usually always negative. Staff, have we had anything over the last 5 or 6 years that you know of that these things didn't work out? We had a lot of people calling in and a lot of problems with the neighborhoods. What's your take on that? Anybody in
the Well, in previous years, Holly Phipps County staff, in previous years, there was a lot of, I guess, concerns and noise concerns out on Vineyard Drive in some areas like that. But a lot, some of the players involved weren't even allowed to have special events and outdoor amplified music. So there were some bad players along with people that were allowed to have amplified music. Along this area, a lot of the wineries have chosen, as part of their project description, to not have outdoor amplified music. So it's kind of case by case. Also in the mix is people that have been approved for temporary events who have received approval for outdoor amplified music. So if they're mixed within this area, then some people may confuse them with a winery facility. But yes, at times it can be a problem with neighbors. That seems to be a concern of, you know, sitting on their back porch every weekend hearing the same wedding song. I understand that. but in this case... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just hearkening back to my long term of living here. You know, as excuse me, Commissioner Villacana pointed out, we're about as the crow flies 7.5 miles from this fair. And we don't hear the music per se. You can't hear the words. You can't hear but you do hear the bass instruments, the thumping, so to speak, clear 7.5 miles from the fair when it's going on. And, of course, we know how loud they turn that up. So that could be an exception. We do have a couple of wineries within our place in the country that are, let's say, about 2 miles away. And there are times when Friday night or whatever that, again, we can hear not so much the music, but the beat. And, you know, the guitars and these types of things you usually don't hear, but you do hear the background beat of the heavier instrument, so to speak. So there's no doubt that this does carry, and there's no doubt that you can't keep it completely quiet. But I don't think after the fact we get that many people complaining.
If I may add, Chairman Campbell, when planning looks at the project and it meets ordinance requirements below 65 decibels, it's not a significant impact. But what you're talking to and what a lot of neighbors are probably aware of is that how the noise carries, although it may not be a significant impact at the property line because it meets the requirements, it is a nuisance. So I clearly understand that.
I guess that's what I'm trying to put on the table for discussion.
Mr. Chair, I have a question before we move into deliberation, if I might.
Really?
It's for Ms. Tubbetts. Thank you for your analysis. So Commissioner Simpson asked the question about continuous levels, and I think if I understand sound levels, that's more related to OSHA, and the continuous level of X over a longer period of time is more likely to cause hearing damage. In this case, we're looking at the music level. So it very much goes to the type of music, acoustic guitar versus something like jazz or rock music, that kind of thing. So with that also, to Mr. Perry's concern, How did your acoustic model take into account what he characterizes as a natural amphitheater effect of the terrain in that area?
Who is this addressed to?
I'm sorry, my question was directed at Ms. Talbots.
Yes, thank you. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes, we can, Ms. Talbots.
Great. I tried to touch on this earlier. The amphitheater effect is a great question. But as I said, I looked at the noise levels conservatively high noise levels that we assumed for these speaker levels, and although there is there may be some increase of levels beyond the property line due to that effect or phenomenon, they remain below the built-in conservatism that we already have in the model, namely through downwind conditions in every direction, and the more importantly, the definition of the sound source itself, the levels that we've chosen to utilize as the sound source. So the levels that we show in our models provide a margin of 10 dB. I would even perhaps stretch that to 15 below the maximum level, and that is well more than any increase effect due to, the amphitheater or the canyon effect.
So if I can paraphrase as a layman, I guess then what you're saying is that your sound modeling takes natural terrain and topology into effect, which would also include this so-called amphitheater effect. So that's already revealed in the findings.
Or if we look at this map, we tend to limit our calculation areas to the property line because that is what the code states. But if we had expanded our calculation area to include the terrain at greater distances, you may see some increase in noise level, but it would be nowhere near, based on calculations and physics, it would be nowhere near the 65 dBA, limit for maximum noise levels.
Okay, thank you.
Sarah, can I add on to that just quickly, if I may? Is that an important component of what we work with Sarah on as we were looking at the acoustical environment is the direction of the speakers and looking at and the sound level coming out of the speakers. So Mr. Perry and Mr. Minucci are located, their houses are to the west of the parish property. And so when we were looking at direction of the speakers, are directed more towards the east. So the acoustical environment, what they're going to be hearing going to the west is going to, it's the lower end of the modeling that was put together.
Yeah. And I would point out that, for example, this western speaker that's shown, that's highlighted in purple, that's pointed to the east, our analysis also includes, it also includes reflection off of the existing building. And so there is a small increase on the order of 1 to 2 decibels that of contribution due to reflection of that building that we also take into account.
So, Sarah, just to kind of do a clarification. So when you took the data points on the map and you said, here's where I'm capturing my analysis, it's 2 meters high is where I'm looking at how the sound wave is moving, I'm capturing it, I'm logging that in. but you didn't go farther out for the acoustic effect, but you acknowledge that if you did go farther out and captured that data, there is a possibility that it would have increased because of the canyon effect. But the where you captured the data was not a little bit farther out. You're just making a general statement that yes, it can increase based off the canyon effect, but you didn't really gather those data points, correct?
We didn't gather data points in the field, if that's what you're referring to when we took measurements. But as I said, I went back and did a calculation over the last 24 hours when I understood that this might be a question. And the calculated levels, even if no terrain is taken, even if no ground attenuation is taken into effect, and you know you had a perfectly reflective canyon or depression in the terrain, then there's physically no way that the noise levels with that effect could exceed 65 dBA.
Mm-hmm. And to put 65 dBA into context, 85 dBA is where permanent damage and hearing loss occurs. Is that correct?
It all depends on the dosage. So when you guys talk about OSHA, it's...
length, too.
Yeah, okay. That would be for like an eight-hour workday, constant noise levels. So,
sure. Yeah. So we have an extension of hours on this request. So it's not only how loud it is, but how long it is. And our ears were designed for what, one decibel?
No, the limitation on how quiet people can kind of sense with their ears, you know, it varies person to person, but it's, you know, you call it the noise floor of your hearing system would be something like 15 or 20 decibels. Beyond that, you know, in an anechoic chamber, those are the types of levels that we see.
Okay. And you talked about it varies from person to person. What is that when you're equating, when you're doing the analysis, how do you factor that in? The variance between people. Do you say, hey, is that why you go more conservative, Sarah?
It's one reason, yeah. But you know, also we just like to kind of have a safety factor. For, you know, a variety of reasons. And yeah, that is one good reason to add a safety factor to your data, but to your findings. But the 65 decibels is not something that's subjective. That's going to be, you know, it's decibels in reference to a pressure level. So that level, you know, may or may not be characterized or described as loud by one person, but it would be by another. So we take all that subjectivity out by just, you know, working with these numbers. I can't speak to, you know, how one person might perceive 65 decibels versus another person. It's an entirely separate question.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah.
Commissioner Muldari.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the question of noise and sound disruption, I think Ms. Tobitz and Holly both made good points about the difference between a statutory or a legal threshold of 65 dBN, but versus auditory and what you can hear, and is the hearing disturbing to you? I think what the code is saying is that if the noise is higher than 65 decibels, then we're just going to assume that it is noisy enough to be detrimental to surrounding uses, not necessarily health harmful, but detrimental from a nuisance standpoint. So that's kind of just the cutoff. But if just because it meets that cutoff doesn't mean that it's not a disturbance to other nearby uses or people. And we all, most of us, I think, in this county, even I do in live in San Luis Obispo, the city, noise levels is not really the criterion that, or not the sole criteria for determining whether noise is disruptive or disturbing. And as, you know, Don pointed out, you can hear baseline 7 miles away. I can hear, you know, the train. I can hear Cal Poly, even though those are miles away. In a quiet environment at night or in the evening, car noises, all those kinds of things can still be disruptive, even if they meet certain decibel thresholds. So I don't think that we should get too hung up on the 65, because that's just, is it, can we even consider it? The question really is, will these noises make an unreasonable impact on the neighbors? And I just had the experience of going up to a rural area in Tulare County at the foothills of the Sierra. And I was with some friends in a cabin, and across the street, you know, 100 yards away or something like that, was a restaurant. And outside in the restaurant, as people were coming out, doors were closing, people on their cars, people were talking and laughing, having a good time. And I'm sure they didn't exceed 65 decibels, but from a standpoint of the experience of being in a cabin in a rural area, was it disruptive? And after 9 o'clock, when people were starting to settle down and go to sleep, was it, you know, annoying? Absolutely. So I think the question for my mind is not, does it meet 65 decibels, but will this be something that is unreasonably disruptive or disturbing to the neighbors? And I would conclude yes. So there's really two things that we need to consider, I guess, today. One is this noise question, and then the other is the expansion of the seating area in the restaurant. Is that a big deal or not? And maybe I'd like to hear from other people about whether they think that is. And as I said before, it would have been helpful. I don't disagree at all with Holly's analysis that parking probably isn't a big deal, traffic's not a big deal. But the finding that because there is an existing covered porch means that it's okay to exceed the 800 square foot code requirements is not particularly compelling, nor is the idea that because we're in a pandemic, people need to go out, you know, they need flexibility to go outside. Well, that's not going to last forever. And in fact, I think in my experience, jurisdictions have been pretty darn flexible in terms of letting people use outdoor areas in lieu of indoors when that was a requirement, which we hope will be lifted soon. So that's not a particularly compelling finding for me either. So I'm just wondering what other commissioners might think about the question of expanding the restaurant, and is that something that will generate problems? Then it comes to we talked about this at our very last meeting, of someone coming in for a use permit, getting approval with certain conditions, and then a few years later coming back and saying, well, you know, those conditions were too strict. Here's a little bit more that I'd like to do. And how many times will we allow that incremental approach over time, and how much increment is too much? And anyway, sorry to ramble. I apologize.
I'd like to ramble a little different direction. Holly, you've been around for quite a while, we know. From the standpoint of compliance officers and these types of people working for the county, taking care of comments and the problems that are called in, et cetera, does that exist for this aspect of our county operations?
compliance officers that would do what they need to do to solve these things?
There is a number you can call at our county website for code enforcement, but we were offering that services at night, and I don't know if we're still doing that now during COVID. Mm-hmm. And being short-staffed.
I'll give you an example, and it's been 10, 15 years ago. I had a man working in a vineyard, and he was spraying herbicide at night. It was nice and calm. And I brought him out two bottles of Eye Splash Wash, set him on the tailgate of his pickup while he was loading up the machine and this type of thing, and checked him out and went home to bed. And he had failed to put him on the tractor with him, and Ag Department came out that night, and I got a nice $250 fine for going home and going to sleep, and he didn't put that stuff in the tractor. So I'm coming kind of from that direction of people complaining about if the neighbor does complain and hears the music real strong, but what's going to happen?
Well, we do have
somebody come out, check it out, and fine them.
Well, we do have built into nowadays versus the past, we've fine-tuned the conditions. Before, we didn't have the conditions that they, our new conditions now have where you can, there's a website, there's a number where you can call if there's any issues or concerns, and the noise monitor will go around, and if they see that it's too loud or whatever, they'll ask the, they'll have the amplified music turned down. Before that didn't exist, and so they would call and nobody would do anything about that. But now that we've included that into the project descriptions, that seems to help as part of the conditions. If there is an issue, you can directly call somebody and say, hey, can you take care of this?
But that's on the winery side. That's not on a county employee that's doing that, correct?
That is correct.
So it's kind of a self-monitoring.
Okay.
And along that same thread, so if there are, across the street, say at Gianni's property, if he has verified reports that the decibel level is 65 plus, you can get those little decibel. I think even Apple Watches do it now where you can get the level of the noise. If there's verified levels above 65, I mean, how many times do we allow it? Is that something where we can say, okay, this isn't working out, we're going to reverse this decision if we decide to allow the amplified music? What enforcement issues do we have if this does become a nuisance, if we approve it?
That's a great question. We have what we call a permit revocation. So with actors that have previously been not adhering to their conditions of approval, and you get several call-ins from the applicant complaining about this and that, then we can start the revocation process. I know in a couple of temporary event projects that we've included a condition for revocation, and I believe we've limited them to like three verified complaints. So if they complaint is verified, and then after we reach like three complaints, then we can start the revocation process.
All right. Thank you.
This is Bend, North County Council. Can I jump in on this too, on just the code enforcement aspect?
Please.
So the county recently adopted some amendments to Title 22 that creates a hearing officer, and the hearing officer would hear any sort of complaints about condition of approval violations. So if there were consistent violations of the conditions of approval, the planning department could bring this project or any other project that was not compliant with its conditions of approval to the hearing officer for a revocation hearing. So we have this more streamlined procedure in place now that just got up and running as of this March. So we're hoping that with this new process, we'll be able to address these code concerns a little bit more effectively and efficiently.
Well, that's good to hear, because I think it will make a lot of difference in how we responded as far as approval or disapproval of some of these things, knowing we have somebody at our back.
Chairman Campbell, if you could also look at condition number 11, that also states enforcement action.
Right.
So, sorry to keep asking follow-up questions on this. So the verified complaints, so kind of along the line that Commissioner Multari was talking about not just the decibel level but the noise, it is a verified complaint where there's a nuisance noise, or does it have to reach that 65 decibel level? So if the neighbor calls and says, you know, this is driving me nuts, the music is loud, but it doesn't reach that high 65 decibel, is it still a complaint that, you know, if you get three of them, it would trigger this revocation?
Our ordinance states that it would have to exceed 65 at the past the property line. So we would fall back to ordinance standards.
Okay. Thank you.
Good question, Alex. It kind of brings home, I think, also Mike's point in terms of what is a nuisance.
Yeah. This is Sarah. I had a couple comments to add maybe some additional color around this. One is there is also in the code, you know, interior noise standards for inside of a dwelling or a building, a home, and the exterior noise standards do still apply, you know, beyond the property line, the applicant's property line. So that I understand would still be, you know, taken into consideration when this verification is done. And then my second comment is, Alex had talked about how Apple phones, watches, smartphones have apps available to take decibel readings. I would strongly warn people, everyone, that those devices are not to be relied upon. And that is not because the computing power is in any way insufficient in these devices nowadays, but it stems from the accuracy or lack thereof of the microphone itself that's within the device. My industry has done studies on the various apps that are out there on different smartphones, and measured levels can easily be 10 decibels off of reality. So we as consultants use highly accurate equipment with expensive microphones, and they are calibrated devices that we calibrate regularly. So I just wanted to add that additional color that, you know, somebody can take a measurement and say, here, look, I took this measurement, but it's generally not considered accurate.
Good comment. Thank you.
I think, though, that kind of, you know, Holly mentioned that there are mitigation steps, right? That there's a process in place. And Ben mentioned, you know, there's a process in place. But I think my question, and it kind of leads to what Sarah just said, is who's doing the enforcement? How quickly can they gather the data? You know, what are the resources they have to gather the data? So if the neighbor is constantly having a problem, how is that really going to be addressed? I mean, it sounds like you have a authorization without appropriation situation. Just a point.
Yeah, I agree that we should be careful about relying on enforcement as the means of not having a problem, rather than trying to prevent the problem up front if there's a reasonable chance of it being a disturbance for people. Can I talk a little bit, or ask my fellow commissioners and staff too, about this restaurant thing? The code says pretty clearly that restaurants are allowed, you know, in the ag zone. And it says just straight out, the size of the limited food service facility in the agricultural category shall contain no more than 800 square feet, including the kitchen dining area and any outdoor dining area. And what the applicants are asking for is not 800 square feet of that, but I think about 1,900 square feet of that. Across the street, of course, there's a when I first read the staff report, I thought, boy, that's sure asking for a lot. Then when I went out there and saw the other commercial type operations across Adelaida Road, I felt less concerned that a larger restaurant would be a big deal in this particular location. But I'm trying to understand what the findings would be. I'm sorry? I was hearing an echo. Maybe it's probably me. I was wondering what the findings would be to justify the larger restaurant seating area. And, you know, the staff report says, well, it's because it's already existing. And like I said before, just because somebody built a patio or a covered deck before they had permission for a particular kind of use doesn't seem like a particularly compelling reason to allow that use when it otherwise would be allowed. And the pandemic, you know, rationale just doesn't hold water for me at all. Why, maybe this is to staff, why are we allowing a restaurant much larger than 800 square feet when the code says that that's the size?
I'm sorry, Holly, it appears that your audio is giving feedback noise. So if you could remain muted.
Okay. Are you ready? Is that okay?
You're clear now.
All right. So a new project come in today, we would definitely look at the ordinance requirements and that it meet ordinance requirements of maintaining that. Yes, it's an existing facility, and what we have here, they're not building anything new. They're converting existing uses. So, you know, would you want them to put up a petition wall in the tasting room so they could meet that requirement when it's kind of going to have a synonymous use with tasting and a restaurant use? So they're using existing facilities, and we can make that modification because they've met all the other ordinance standards, you know, within 5 miles of a URL and the others that I stated on the PowerPoint, that if all other standards were met. So I believe for neighborhood compatibility, it's close enough to the URL. It's not out in the boonies, and they're not building a new facility.
Well, yeah. The code again says that limited. There is a really bad echo from. I'm getting feedback on this.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Says limited food service facility shall be within the same structure as the wine tasting facility or the winery facility where there's no tasting is proposed, or within the same structure as the visitor serving use where the use is not a winery. So it seems like there's been a history of thinking about this, and the county came up with this 800 square foot threshold and came up with fairly specific regulations to avoid the conversion of wineries into full-scale restaurants. Personally, I don't see, if this were just for the indoor area, which would be an extension of 800 square feet to 975 square feet, well, you know, that's just, to me, that's just an incremental increase, you know, kind of no harm, no foul. That would be, you know, perfectly reasonable to me. But to go all the way up to 1,900 square feet, you know, I'm having a hard time making findings why that's okay.
You're including the covered porch in the 1900?
Yeah, the code says you're supposed to count that. Yeah.
Yes, right.
So
I'm right. You know, it is 1900, over 1900.
You know, so I'm less concerned about, as the neighbors have said, I'm less concerned about the increase in the restaurant, although it always bothers me when we make these, when we're supposed to make findings and the findings are pretty weak. And we've talked about that before, and I'm probably as guilty as anybody else in that regard. But I am more concerned about the noise, because I think the technical threshold of 65 decibels doesn't capture the potential of disruption to the neighborhood that it comes from activities, particularly amplified activities.
Yeah, I personally am less concerned about the restaurant. I mean, the business has changed, and you know, as kind of this whole pandemic has shown, and I'm not saying this should be pandemic related, but I think it has changed the model a little bit of a lot of businesses that probably won't go back to the way it was. I don't think we're going to go back to that same tasting style we've gone in the past. I think more people are going by appointment only, which I think is a real benefit to the roads and to everything else because it limits a little more. So to be honest, that side of it isn't my concern. The noise is the concern. Just I've always thought, you know, I want to be a good neighbor, and the noise, you know, even if it is within the standards called out, still can be annoying. I do like it there that there are some enforcement abilities. Saying that, it's a hassle if you do have to go through that and prove your point and go through the whole process. Since they already have allowed outside music until 10 o'clock, I guess my question is, why does it have to be amplified if you can have a band playing? I guess along that question, what decibel level is a band that is non-amplified? Is that, I mean, how loud is that?
That's a good question. Commissioners, I'm going to interject some thoughts here. We're 5 minutes past our normal break. I don't know how close you think we are to going to a vote on this. And I think our next item, as we all know, is going to be pretty short-lived. So what is your wish? Want to take a break or continue on?
I'm fine continuing.
I'm fine with continuing, too, as long as I can pick up Zara if we can have that 12 o'clock break, if we run that long.
We'll certainly stop at 12 for still going. I think we can probably get this wound up.
Okay.
So we'll continue on, and if the consensus agrees. Good.
Well, okay. I mean, I guess... I'm struggling a little bit with this one. I find it a little bit more straightforward in some ways, and I'm a little bit bemused, and this is not at the expense of my fellow commissioners. It's just at the general situation when we've been looking at cannabis ordinances and bemoaning the lack of technical means and quantitative measures to assess how stinky something is, and we can't do that. And I think points were made that, you know, somebody's rose garden could be a nuisance to some people that with sensitive receptors. And here we're dealing with a similar situation where, you know, rock or punk is one person's, you know, melody and somebody else's nemesis. So, but what's different here is that we actually have a technical means and a standard that's been set by the county to provide at least some measure in some shall we say, line to not be crossed. So having said that, it doesn't necessarily reduce the perception of a nuisance and the intrusion on the quietness and amenity of neighboring properties, but we have something to go by. So I'm struggling with that because if there's an issue with the measure of the adequacy of that, and you know, how quiet is acoustic unamplified and how loud is rock, you know, it's a yardstick, right? To let the process do work, and if there's issues with those limits, then pull them back and make it 60 dB or 55 or whatever. Well, we've seen from the sound analysis, acoustic mapping, that we're looking like maybe 55 at the property line, maybe some amplification of that, you know, phase adding and that kind of thing at further distances, but would never be more than the 65, far below it at the edges of neighboring properties. So I like the idea that we're conditioned that the applicant must provide a noise monitor. They must provide an immediately available cell phone or a means for neighbors to get a hold and say, hey, this really is a nuisance, and deal with it on the spot. I do see that there's a problem with how do you then, subsequent to that, provide some real-time technical measures that say, okay, we're going to have a concert 2 Saturdays from now, or I should say an event, and put up measures to say what's actually going on at the edges, and are we not in compliance? So I don't know the answer to that. But on balance, I would say that we have the controls in place with regard to a monitor and enforcement, and I would I would see this as a reason to potentially go forward with this. Going back to the other things, I mean, I'll defer to people that have experience in food service and hospitality and that kind of thing. I have no comment to make on the density or the number of covers and how big or small tasting room is. You could make it 2,000 square feet and only put 10 people in there because you're having, you know, quiet, separate, shall we say, guided events, or you can stuff it like a biker bar out at Pozo or something where people are shoulder to shoulder. So I'll defer to that, but thinking about the traffic, I don't think that there's going to be an exceedingly large, if any, increase to traffic or to hourly trips and that kind of thing. That particular area of Adelaide Road is actually one of the better areas for sight line, both to the, well, nominally to the east and west, turning in and out of that, out of the parish property. So I would, at least in terms of safety, not see that to be a concern as far as I'm concerned. So that's my comments. Thank you.
Appreciate that set of conclusions. Yes. Any further comments?
I think from the expansion of the food service, I see your point, Alex. You know, maybe the business model has changed, and maybe that's a arena in which they need to go into. Okay, I'm okay with that. But on the extension of those 4 hours to amplify music, if you already have music outside, although it's not amplified, you have amplified music inside. I know what you're saying, Phil, in terms of, hey, you know, there's mitigation efforts, but I don't feel confident that the enforcement is capability is there. And I think that that just creates additional problems between neighbors and changes what I would call the atmosphere of the environment that they live in. So is 4 hours of amplified music, I mean, is that really where we kind of, you know, I really appreciate Sarah's input in terms of the research and the decibels, but to me as an analyst, it seems like there's some data points missing. Or in terms, as there would be with odor, right? As there would be, that's a good point. So I'm not in favor of the additional 4 hours of amplified music, but I am okay with the extension of the capability for the restaurant.
Christina, I appreciate that. Let me ask you this. So given, as I understand, unamplified outdoor music is already allowed, and Mr. Chair, would it be acceptable to ask the owner, in this case the applicant, how this addition to outdoor amplified music is going to enhance his operation or his business? Is that something the commission wants to ask?
They're already there. They're already drinking wine. So what's the difference when you plug one in or don't plug it in? That's a good question. I'll allow it to be answered if staff or the owner could answer it.
I think if it's allowed, I'd like to hear from the owner.
Yes, I agree. Can we handle that?
Is David, are you on? And I'm looking to see if Mr. Parrish is on the line.
I think we wore him out.
I don't think so. I know he wanted to participate. I was trying to get him ready for the question. And I will, since I don't see him in our gallery view, I'll do my best to answer the question for him. Although he said hit the hand.
I don't see him as an attendee either, Jamie.
You don't? Okay.
Okay.
And Daniela, do you see if he's on the phone tuned in? No?
No.
No? Okay.
So
I'll give him my best. So when we were...
Jamie,
yes.
Do you know someone named Cecily Ray? They keep...
that's David's daughter. And she
okay,
is
so...
From the tasting room.
I don't know if she's here, if she's ready to speak on general public comment, or if maybe he's using her phone. So
he's using her phone.
Okay, let me unmute her line and let him talk.
I have not closed public comment yet. So
great. I got taken off the hot seat there.
Okay, the line has been unmuted, and you're able to speak now. Sorry about that.
Could I, just before you start, could I ask either Alex or Don to put my question in a better format as business owners and knowing the landscape? Try to ask what I asked in a more understandable way, please.
Hello, have I been unmuted?
Yes.
Oh, well, you got my daughter's picture. We're in her office. She had a much bigger screen than I do. Well, thank you all for the conversation. I think these are all valid points. The point about enhancing our business, what we wanted to do was to have some music towards the end of the evening when it's really nice out for our club members and so forth, when we're having a club dinner, and then to have some music. And in the past, we have had unamplified music, but it would have been nice to have some amplified music at times. We don't expect to do this all the time, but mainly for club dinners and for enhancing the club members' experience here.
Okay, thank you.
Define the kind of music that you'd hire, Dave.
Well, we mainly use jazz and soft music. You know, again, this is mainly for dinner music.
Right.
We were not looking at, someone mentioned Vina Robles. I think they've got a good business model, but it's not mine. We don't have weddings out here for that particular reason, because they just are too loud, too many people. We are a boutique winery and tasting room, and somebody mentioned something about the business model. It really has changed. A couple of the supervisors I appreciated mentioned that the business model has changed for us, and people are looking for more of a full experience. So the expansion of the restaurant, we just want to stay within code. We just want to be able to extend that experience out a little bit to give that experience of food and wine. We do everything by appointment now, which really does help us controlling everything as far as the experience, but also the food, the traffic, the parking. And then back to the music. Again, we're not looking at disruption of the neighborhood. It's more just enhancing the experience of our club members.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to bring this back to a deliberation, closed public comment.
Mr. Chairman, just to move things along, I'm going to see if there's any support. Before, my thought would be, from my standpoint, would be to approve the expansion of the restaurant based on the conversation that we've had, but not to allow the extension of the amplified music beyond 5 p.m. And if that seems like something that the majority of the commission would go with, I've marked what would need to be changed in the findings and conditions.
I would have one question for you, Commissioner Matari. You know, music is music, and amplified can be turning the dial to number one or turning the dial to number 50.
So, or 11.
So they could still have music. They can still have a group playing there.
Right.
Just not amplified.
Exactly.
Most guitars are amplified in most cases. Well, so you're kind of splitting hairs here in a way.
Yeah, I think
I could just see a group having dinner and get to that point by not having the music. You mean put them on the cases and go home, or continue on with the music, just not in an amplified form?
Well, they're allowed now to have the music without amplification. And it seems that would be a perfectly pleasant summer evening event to me. And I just don't think that extending that to amplified music till 9 o'clock is such a great idea. And I appreciate that certain kinds of music might be more conducive to, you know, be soothing and stuff like that. But we're doing a use permit that runs with the land, not with this person or with this person's taste. This will be part of this piece of property into infinity. So somebody else may own it and may have a different view of what is the kind of music that they want to have. And I don't think that's, frankly, I just don't think that's relevant. I think the question is the noise levels and will it be disturbing? And I think it's just not necessary. So anyway, that would be my position. And I would make that motion, but only if I'll step back if people have other ideas.
I'm actually going to say that, you know, kind of after listening to Commissioner Henry, you know, and kind of going back to some of the cannabis discussions we have had, you know, this is something that's called out. It's measurable. If you have the proper instrumentation, you can basically mm-hmm. say this is too loud versus the cannabis smell issue that we've dealt with. Mm-hmm. You know, there are enforcement methods in place, though I don't hopefully it would never get to that. So I think at first I was leaning towards saying no to the amplified music, but, you know, kind of going through the code and you know, plus knowing the people they are, the winery owners, you know, and granted it does run with the land, but it can be revoked. I would be more in favor of approving the application as a whole.
And I'm going to confound you now, because after having listened to Commissioner Spearman and Baltari, I'm thinking, well, you know, the running with the land thing actually resonates with me. And the value add over amplified after certain hours versus just acoustic, if I were a patron, I actually complain when things are too loud and I can't have a conversation because the music's too loud. So I'm kind of flip-flopping the other way. Sorry about that.
Well, for you newer members of the commission, I can assure you that we have had this discussion over 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago. And we had approved this music. We improved the enlarging of a stage out off Hog Canyon. Neighbors were all right with it. They have music all the time. I think we have a lot of them that are playing music that aren't being, turned in for whatever. I tend to agree that this would go with me just the way it is. I can't see. You know, I can see softening the music. Yeah, I just hate to put it down that they can't. We have tons of places out there that go to 9 o'clock to 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock with music, do we not?
Yeah, and they can still do that, but they just can't do the amplified part outside for those 4 hours. So they still can have their music inside, outside.
Yeah, I realize that. I'm just trying to...
So I see what you're saying, Chairman, but I still feel like those 4 hours of amplified music, I think... When I take a look at their neighbors and the environment, I just don't feel, and I understand what you're saying, there's an enforcement mechanism, but I mean, if it's not staffed and supported, and what's the turnaround time when you call in, and how long does it take for you to get a result, and does that cause more animosity? I don't know.
Excuse me, quick. Let me help you with this. A quick question, Holly or Xandria. You realize over the years that we've approved the same thing several times. Was it approving music, period, or amplified music? Do we have situations out there now where it specifically says amplified music?
They're the current one that we're looking at right now.
It was approved five years ago,
and it said amplified music cut off at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think this is an example.
Yes, our previous projects that come for you today, if they're requesting amplified music, I try to get that off from the applicant right off the bat to see if we need a noise analysis, and that becomes part of their project description. So when they're asking for a noise beyond 5 p.m., then we're asking for a modification for that. So
I would guess that most of these over the years that we've approved have been 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
and this being more the exception than the rule, I guess, is where I'm coming from.
Oh. We've certainly talked about this a lot. Does anybody want to make a motion and test?
I have the feeling that your motion may be proper to do.
Okay. Well, Alex, it's your district. Do you want to take the lead, or you want me to try my motion?
Well, if I was to make a motion, I'm going to make a motion to approve the proposal. But it doesn't sound like that's going to get support from the whole commission. So I don't know what the proper procedure would be on that. Should I just go ahead and make the motion and then we vote on it?
Yeah, I think that if that's what you think the right answer is, you should make that motion and see if there's a second, and then we can vote on it. And if it doesn't pass, then we'll try something else.
Okay, so I'll make a motion to approve conditional use permit DRC 2020-00003 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
Is there a second to that motion?
Yes, I'll second that, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Henry, second it? Is that correct?
Yes.
I'm looking at my papers. Any further discussion?
Just for the reasons that I mentioned before, I won't support the motion, but I respect the making of it and all. But I won't support it.
Well, and likewise, I think having seconded the motion, I respect the other views. And for me, it was a wobbler. So, as usual, the commission is respectful in their deliberation.
And I totally concur. It is a wobbler for me too. And this one, I think, just because there's a little bit more clarity on how to measure it, I'm going to kind of. That's why I made the motion.
Very good.
Okay. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Villicana?
Yes.
Commissioner Henry?
Yes.
Commissioner Spearman?
No.
I lost count.
Moltari is next.
Commissioner Moltari.
No.
And Chairman Campbell.
Yes.
Very good. There you go, Alex.
The motion passes.
You just better keep it down at night.
Thank you all. Thank you for your discussion and your time.
Okay. And just before we leave this item, Mr. Chairman, just one, and I'm not trying to be crabby today, but maybe I am, is that some advice to staff, Xandria and Holly and so on. Remember the staff report, we're volunteers, and we don't have the history or background that you guys might have in these things, and neither does the public that's reviewing it necessarily. So when there's the questions like, is there adequate parking? Is there going to be a traffic impact? Is there going to be water impacts? Is there a history? Is there a difference between food pairing versus restaurants? That kind of background would be really helpful to have in the staff report and not have it show up ad hoc at the hearing itself, because... when do we spend our time thinking about this stuff? It's not at the time of the hearing. It's when we go out and look at the site and think about that. So I guess I'm just trying to counsel that help us out a little bit more and make those staff reports a little bit more clear and a little more complete, so that the issues that are related to our jurisdiction or are addressed, even if the answer is obvious to you, say that. These are the issues, and here's why we think the answers are obvious.
That's why I brought up some of the questions from the past, because I have forgotten on some of these that we approved, what their time was and what their music was, et cetera, et cetera. But I know we've had this conversation 6-7 years ago. And so those kind of, things would help us out tremendously.
Okay. Enough said for my part. Thank you.
Okay.
The feedback is greatly appreciated, and I took diligent notes on the comments that you provided today. And yes, we will make sure that in our future reports going forward that we do, we beef up our background so that you have a better history of the project, especially if it's amendments and what took place before and what issue areas were discussed before. And then also with the analysis, just making sure that we're connecting all those dots.
Thank you very much.
I think it's only fair to the applicants also.
Yeah.
You know, 3 years ago, so-and-so got it. Why can't I get it? This type of thing. So mm-hmm. It would be helpful for the applicants as well as us. Okay, we agreed to move right along, and I think we can take care of this rather rapidly. So would you please, Ramona, introduce the next item?
Hearing item number 6 is a continued hearing to consider a request by the Port San Luis Harbor District for a minor use permit, coastal development permit. County file number DRC 2019-00161, Supervisorial District Number 3, Lacey Minnick, Project Manager. And if there are any members of the public wishing to comment on this item, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or press star 9 if you are joining us by phone. Please do this at this time in order to be called at the public comment portion of the hearing. Please continue with your presentation, Ms. Minnick.
We're going to have ex parte, Mr. Chair.
Yes, any ex parte on this?
I visited the site.
Same as we had last time.
Yeah. Visited the site.
Visited the site.
Continuation.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Good morning, Chair Campbell and members of the Commission. My name is Lacey Minnick, and I am a supervising planner in current planning. Before I start my presentation, I'd like to bring your attention to the fact that the applicant, Andrea Luker, the Port San Luis Harbor District Manager, requested a continuance of this hearing on May 7, 2021. And I'd like to ask your commission if you'd like to consider that request prior to the presentation or proceed with the presentation.
Mr. Chair, I'd personally like to proceed with the presentation.
All right. Are you all aware, did you all have a copy of the letter that they sent with the description?
Yes.
My 2 cents worth is that my ex parte was very thorough because I went over every square inch of that property. I saw the construction. I saw the big rain hit, et cetera, et cetera. And this really has nothing to do with the Harbor Commission or anybody else. It's the contractors that ran into very difficulties, including Indian remains, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And had we last time extended it to what they wanted, we almost would be right onto the date when they were moving this thing. So that's kind of the way I look at it. And we moved it up a month, and they're saying, see, we told you so.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Well, we moved it up a month to try to stimulate a more aggressive action on their part, and I guess it just didn't work.
Mr. Wrong people. The contractors who need to stimulate.
Yeah, I suppose. Mr. Chairman, this is something that we actually should never have gotten before us, to tell you the truth. This is a result of the staff of the Harbor District and the planning staff having miscommunicated early on in this process, and nobody wanted to hold up the Harbor Terrace project as a consequence, and they kind of boxed themselves in where they had to recommend denial of this and then sent it to us, and, you know, we know the story, and this is really unfortunate, and it's not really the way we should be conducting business. I think at this point we have 2 choices. We can hear the presentation and deny it, the permit, let the Harbor Commission appeal it, and by the time any of this got anywhere close to the Board of Supervisors, if Ms. Luker's time frame is correct, it'll be done and moot. Or we can just continue it, and this time we'll continue it to a date uncertain and let them finish the project and get it over with. But personally, I don't want to see this again, period.
And Mr. Chair, I would support Commissioner Moltari in that. I think that we're in this unfortunate circumstance, you know, which 3 of the commissioners inherited from last year. Mm-hmm. I feel at this stage that we owe county staff, long-suffering county staff, a decision. And I feel at this stage that we also owe the long-suffering people that are unfortunately within view of this. Again, and I'm not saying the reasons are right or wrong or indifferent as to how we got here. At this stage, I don't think we want to see this again. I don't want to waste any more Planning Commission time. I don't want to waste any more county planning staff time. I think we should make a decision, let the process, as Commissioner Moltari pointed out, take its course, and there'll be no harm, no foul. We will have tabled this and can move on with our lives.
Chair Campbell, maybe if I can just address one point. Regarding the bona fides of actually coming to the Planning Commission, because I think there is a legitimate basis to why it is coming before you, and that is because there's a fundamental disagreement as to whether the movement of the sea trains with commercial fishing gear in them constitutes storage or whether it constitutes a temporary construction yard. And that will kind of frame the dispute as between the Port San Luis and the county staff. And so that's when we wanted to bring that dispute up to the Planning Commission. And that was through the use permit that the Port San Luis submitted, saying this constitutes a temporary construction yard. It's no different if you were going to move a house, you know, from the property, and what's in it is irrelevant, versus county staff taking the position that, no, this is a temporary storage yard. That's the appropriate use. So that is kind of the basis as to why it bubbled up to the Planning Commission. So it's not, it wasn't as us trying to kick the dispute to someone else. But
no, we understand, John, we understand that. Yeah. We understand the history. And it's just we have two public agencies trying to get the right thing done, and it would have been nice if the staff had, on both parties, had been a little clearer about what they were trying to do and what the real options were before it did get into the situation where it had to bubble up to us. Right. But that's water long past under the bridge. Let's get the project done. Let's get that stuff moved out of here in the most expeditious way and get it over with. Thank you, though. I appreciate what you're saying. So I guess we have to open the public hearing, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Chair Campbell, no.
We'll go right to opening the public hearing now.
To public comment, no pre-recorded messages and no request to speak other than Ms. Luchner, who has her hand raised. And
okay. Ms. Luchner, do you want to fill us in, please?
Thank you. Good morning, Planning Commissioners. I won't belabor the points that were previously discussed. Certainly, it's a long history. If anybody is ever interested in the port's perspective, we're happy to provide that as well. I am happy to tell you that basically the status that we provided to you at the last meeting is still really the status. Curb and gutter is going in. If you went to the site, you saw that just very recently. They believe they're going to be pouring the concrete pads for the sea trains on the 20th or 21st, which is similar to what we had said last time. And we believe we should be able to be moving in early or mid-June. So I appreciate the option of the date uncertain. I know that your last motion was to put a fire under the port, and I do respectfully state that we are as interested as any other group to get this project done, but we don't have any particular ability to put a fire under the contractor. They're working as diligently and hard as they can. So I appreciate that. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much.
Questions for the applicant? Have you given any second thought besides your letter to the extension date that you think will work, or would you think we ought to make it longer?
Mr. Chairman, let's just make it to a date uncertain so that we don't have to go through this again. And if for any reason this goes out to an unreasonable point of time, the staff can bring it back at that time. But let's just get this off our docket.
Okay, that sounds good.
Gentlemen, I understand that. From what I'm hearing from you, whether we deny or approve, it's going to have the same result in terms of the timeline. But what my concern is those sea or connexes is what I know them as, they're taking up valuable space for the public and for the business owners of Apple Beach. Mm-hmm. And you know, I want them gone. And where can we put, you know, an indefinite period seems like we don't care. And I would prefer to have something that says, you know, it has to be done by here, even if I know we don't want to see it again. But it's kind of that, it says something to me.
So let me ask a question. I think it's of staff, and it's my ignorance. And I completely agree with you, Commissioner Spearman, that, you know, put a stake in the sand. And so the question, I guess, Lacey, is if the commission, well, first of all, the point is we need to make a decision. We have been kicking this can down the road, and we need to make a decision. And the reason is not only for this current thing, but it's also it's also enhancing precedent over what the ordinances are for and how the ordinances need to be used. And so to not make a decision is putting a potential weakening those ordinances because, you know, we're not, by lack of action, not enforcing them, I guess, if that makes sense. So if the commission were to take a stance today, Lacey, and deny, and so that decision is made, what then, in terms of enforcement, that process kicks in? Presumably there may or may not be appeal, but the enforcement kicks in, and then at some stage, those would have to be moved, if I'm to understand. And I understand the applicant is motivated to do that, but what definitely will happen is, having made a decision, is that no further use, to Commissioner Simpson's point, can be made, inappropriate use of that parking lot. So that would be the stake in the sand. Am I correct in believing that?
So let me try to answer that question, Commissioner Henry, and I may ask County Council John Ancelabahir to weigh in as well. With respect to what denying or approving this minor use permit results in. So approving this minor use permit would result in the allowance of this C-Train storage yard or Connex container storage yard at this location. And denying this permit would do the opposite. It would say that this is not a suitable land use for this location. Now, of course, the applicant is entitled to due process and can appeal any decision that this commission makes in the same way that any member of the public can appeal a decision that this commission makes, and that decision would then be heard by the Board of Supervisors. But to be clear, denying this use permit would not necessarily result in the relocation of these containers. That the requirement to relocate these containers would be a process that follows that process. Yeah. And if County Council has something to add, they're more than welcome to.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. It really is the practical enforcement. If this was months and months ago, there might have been, I would say, a more practical way to apply pressure to the port to find another suitable location, but that has its challenges too. And so if this commission denies the permit, most likely it'd be appealed, and there'd be a waiting game. And the time period for them, I think they're on the heels of being able to move them to the right location. So to answer, you know, Commissioner Spearman's question, there isn't a good way to apply the immediate pressure to immediately move them between now and the month or month and a half as to when they'll be moving into the correct site. So I think right now, if you want to make a decision, it's just going to be at least on the merits of the decision. So at least we could say, look, now we've looked at this. This isn't the appropriate use for it, but the issue with having them there and the the negotiations between county staff and Port St. Louis staff that's not for us. We're not making a we're not delving into that. We're just making a decision on the land use itself, and we'll give it to staff to deal with how to deal with it from here on out.
So can I follow up then, please, with that? So that was the no. If the commission were to vote yes, then that would change that land use in perpetuity. So even if the applicant did move those containers, they would be free at any future point in time to move other stuff in there, because we've actually allowed that variation to the land use. Is that correct?
Well, I would say it doesn't change the zoning, but it certainly puts a pin in terms of what the interpretation might be if there's a future application. Every application is unique. I think if there's a future one, notwithstanding this planning commission's decision on that, staff would probably take a very exacting interpretation of it, regardless of that decision.
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, I don't think any of us think that this is the right use in the right location. We're just trying to figure out the...
Neither did we.
Yeah, exactly. We're trying to figure out the most reasonable way to proceed, and the way that does, you know... send a message, I guess, if that's important to people. The motion would then be to deny the permit based on the findings in the staff report. And the applicants, I just have one question. Does the port incur any costs in appealing the decision?
No.
Okay.
It's free.
So they have 10 working days in which to appeal, so that pushes it out 2 more weeks. If they finally appeal, by the time all the rigmarole's gone through and works its way up, it will, unless there's some catastrophe, entirely moot. So if that's the preference of Mr. Henry and Ms. Spearman, then let's do it and let's get on to more substantive stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just to reiterate, I just think that we owe staff a decision, and actually to underline the ordinance. And, you know, it's unfortunate how we got here, and maybe at some stage we'll understand lessons learned. It's all about communication, so that's where I'm at. And as has been pointed out, there will, you know, be no harm to the applicant in terms of they're as motivated, but it just puts an end to this whole affair.
And... Lacey Minnick, planning staff, Commissioner Henry and Commissioner Moltari, if I may, just for a brief moment, prior to bringing this to your commission for the first time over a year ago, mm-hmm. County staff, myself, coordinated with the port and provided 3 options to them with respect to this matter based on what John said, you know, our interpretation of the code. And those options were, number one, proceed with the minor use permit, knowing that staff will recommend denial based on our understanding of the code and interpretation of the code. Number two, relocate the C-train or Connex storage containers to a suitable location that is allowed in the code, based, again, on our interpretation. Or number 3, withdraw the application and voluntarily relocate the C-trains. And at that time, the port made the choice to proceed, and that's why I've presented this item to you on 4 separate occasions. Thank you.
I just have trouble with this relocating the C-train. Do you realize what that costs?
Yep.
And
it's
only a month and 45 days of them having the pavement in. It's ridiculous to think about relocating those.
And Commissioner Campbell, I don't believe that's an appropriate option at this time. That conversation was over a year ago.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think we should be discussing that now. We're almost at the end of the line, so.
Lacey.
Do we need to hear the staff report to move forward to make this? Or we've heard it before.
I personally
don't think we need to hear it.
Certainly, I don't think we need to.
No.
If you want to, we can, but we just didn't. Well, again, I put some of the fault on us. She asked for May, or she asked for June. I can't remember the exact date, and we moved it up a month. So we kind of shot our own selves in the foot in that one, and she would have been right. I say she is our manager. She's in coordination with the contractor all the time, and they're up there getting ready to pave it right now. They got millions of dollars in this. They're not going to go move away and start messing around somewhere else. I think we ought to extend it another to June or so.
Okay, I respect that, Chairman, but I see that a little bit different. I agree with staff that we would do the denial, understanding that, you know, there's no harm, no fall with the port, and that it would make the point that I think is so important to the public, Chairman, which is that these parking spaces were meant for the public and were meant for the businesses in Avila, so that can be the town that we want it to be, and not to store Connexes for others to put their stuff in when we could have people downtown in Avila. And I just feel very strongly about that. And since the end result will be the same, and it's really kind of a point of precedence, that's why I feel strongly about moving forward with the denial.
Well, let me ask you one question. The same people have the same stuff in those containers that they had before. This is not an issue of emptying the containers and somebody else using them. It's just where they're sitting now.
Right. And they're sitting out there right now. And you're taking up parking spots.
And they've been sitting there.
They have. So I think it's time to say, you know, that's not, as staff has recommended, you know, that's not proper use. And deny it.
What's not proper use?
He trades out a public parking lot.
Yeah, it's a public parking lot, I notice. Yeah.
But all really good points, I think. And we could get into, is commercial fishing higher priority than visitor-serving recreation? And was commercial fishing gear storage necessary? You know, I just don't... Well, anyway, that's enough. I personally have been involved in this thing now, unfortunately, for well over a year, and I would like us to either deny it or continue it indefinitely and move on to something substantive. I think Commissioner Campbell or Chairman Campbell's point is well taken. Regardless of what we do, these guys are highly motivated to get this thing completed, and before anything happens, it will be done. And there's nothing we can do to speed it up. There's nothing we can do, I don't think, that we can slow it down. So it's just, this was just kind of a really frustrating and unfortunate process, which I hope we never do again. And if there's a lesson to be learned, it's that this is a stupid way of dealing with this problem.
But I would ask counsel then again, I the word denial kind of sticks in my craw because we've been working with people to get this done. So if we deny it, John, where do we stand? How is this different for Port San Luis, or is it?
I think the denial would be you guys making a decision on the merits on the actual land use, whether this constitutes a temporary storage yard, a construction storage yard, or it's storage, and so it's simply a decision on those merits alone. In terms of the actual impact to Port San Luis, given that they're on the heels of moving them, they probably will appeal it. And even if they don't appeal it, I would imagine we'd give some breathing room to let them move it there. The idea of trying to start finding them or start moving or requiring them to move it when they're just going to move it in a month, I don't think that makes any sense at all. But I think what we're looking for is something just on the merits itself, on the underlying land use. So, or if this commission continues it continues it again. I mean, I think the net effect is going to be the same. It's just really we're looking for a decision on the merits of the underlying
land use. That was my question.
Yeah.
And also, if there's any thoughts in the commission that, you know, maybe they won't be moved, you need to remember if you drive up there and look, the asphalt plots for these specific storage containers are all there and all in place and aisles between them, et cetera. So you know they're going to be moved there because it's been constructed to do that.
Yeah, the Port San Luis gave us staff a tour of it, and it's beautiful. So
yeah, you do that.
Alex,
well, I'll entertain a motion. If either way we vote, we'll end up with the same.
I was going to say the same thing. It seems like we're going to end up in the same place. I think a vote to Commissioner Spearman's point is really about the land use issue and us putting a stake in the ground saying this shouldn't be done. If we vote that way, I would support that. If we continue it, I would support that too, because I really do think the end use is the same.
I'm at the same place, yeah.
I think bringing closure is necessary and get it off our docket and clear the roads for upcoming things. So with that, if I could be allowed to make a motion, Mr. Chair.
Please do.
I would move to deny minor use permit DRC 2019-00161 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A.
I second that motion.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion or questions?
No.
Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Henry?
Yes.
Commissioner Spearman?
Yes.
Commissioner Moltari?
Yes.
Commissioner Villacana?
Yes.
And Chairman Campbell?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay. All right. Some good discussions, everybody.
Thank you.
Lunchtime. May I have a motion to take all testimony and documents into the record?
So moved.
Second.
There's a second. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And a motion to adjourn this meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Second. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion is carried. We will now adjourn the meeting.
Thank you. All right. Very nice.
See you guys in a couple weeks.
Chairman and other commissioners, just one quick thing. I just wanted to draw to your attention next week, the next meeting. I actually need to go and see my dad out of state, so I'm not going to be here. I didn't know. I just wanted to make you aware, particularly chairman and other commissioners, that, you know, I'm not skipping.
Yes, you are. Now that things are moving down to South County, you're not interested anymore.
No.
So that would be away after just a few meetings.
That's the meeting in the 20s.
Yes, this next one coming up. And I didn't know, Don, if you wanted me to, what the procedure is. Do I need to send you an email? Or I wasn't sure what you wanted me to do.
Christina, you send me an email.
Got it. Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. So then I'll see you in June.
All right.
Very good.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thanks. Bye. Bye now.
Bye, everyone.